On our draft special, we recap the NBA draft with CBS Radio's Adam Kaufman and look ahead to the NHL draft with NHL.com's Mike Morreale. Plus, tipping picks, pro or con, we'll discuss. Colin, it's draft special starts right now. Welcome into Colin, it's draft review preview special. I'm Alex Barth. He's Alex Lebowitz. NBA draft last night, NHL draft tomorrow. We'll start on the hardwood. Pretty plain draft last night, but that doesn't mean there hasn't been a lot happening in the fallout. Here to break it all down with us from 10:30 a.m. WBZ Radio is Adam Kaufman. Adam, thanks for joining us.
Happy to, guys.
So, two big stories right now for Celtics fans. They take Jason Tatum last night, third overall, a pick a lot of people liked, but you come out with a tweet this morning basically saying that there is a chance now the Celtics could trade for Paul George with a three-year extension, which is what Celtics fans have been waiting for since the trade deadline, not just getting George, but getting him with the assurance he'll be here long-term. Which story deserves more attention right now?
Honestly, I think Jason Tatum does, simply because he's here. He was introduced to the Boston media. He's holding up the number 11 old Evan Turner jersey, and we know, barring some sort of trade, whether that would involve, you know, Tatum or not, the expectation is, at the very least, he is going to be a member of the Celtics, whether that's, you know, a Paul George thing or whether things get all kinds of wild. But I would say Jason Tatum simply because, again, you're talking about the number three pick in the draft, the guy that Danny Ainge considered to be the best pick in the draft, more so than seemingly even consensus number one, Markelle Fultz, Lonzo Ball. Both of these guys, guards, project to have great careers. Well, Tatum in the Celtics' eyes does as well and arguably even better. So he would be, the guy that I think a lot of people should be talking about, but I understand why the Paul George, Gordon Hayward situation is getting a lot of attention, because we love the silly season. We love the NBA offseason, and this is just another little fuse or another little match, because even Danny Ainge, in multiple interviews that he has done this morning, he was on the Sports Hub and, he was on the Sports Hub and addressed the fact that it was a quick conversation with the Knicks. He didn't think Kristaps Porzingis was ever really available. As far as Jimmy Butler, he said they were never really in on him, and he thought that, you know, going to Minnesota made sense for both clubs. And he wasn't really asked specifically about Indiana and Paul George. And then when he was on CSN a short time ago doing an interview with those guys, he said he felt the team got close on a trade last night. And he didn't go into detail beyond that, but I think it's fair to assume, or at least reasonable to assume, that Paul George might have been that guy, especially with the Adrian Wojnarowski report last night during the draft saying there were serious talks between the clubs that stalled at a point. Well, I think going forward, I expect them to be revisited.
So what would it take to get Paul George, and does it hinge on whether or not he's willing to sign an extension with the Celtics?
Well, I don't know that it hinges on whether he'd be willing to. I just think the compensation obviously would differ. And quite frankly, my opinion, for whatever that's worth, is that it should hinge on whether he signs an extension. To me, it's not worth giving up assets, at least not significant ones, meaningful ones, young talents or future potential lottery picks for Paul George when he's a one-year rental and then goes off to L.A. if that's, you know, your kind of worst case scenario, biggest fear, however you want to frame it. That, to me, it's stay away from him, focus on Gordon Hayward or building around your young nucleus and go from there. But if, as I had put out there, there's an extension in place and you can get him to come, one, it's going to elevate the package, understandably so. You're talking about an all-star, an all-teamer, first-teamer in the prime of his career. And it would obviously show what the Celtics are looking to do, which is, you know, not only build for the future, but win now, if they wouldn't have to give up young pieces that are on the current roster. Now, my thought is, as far as what you could potentially get him for, I don't think you necessarily have to give up a Brooklyn pick, as crazy as that might sound. I don't think you need to give up Jason Tatum. I don't think you need to give up Jaylen Brown. You'd be giving up probably the other pick you just got from the Sixers, whether that's a Sixers, Clippers, or Kings pick, however that's all kind of one fold. Probably another future first. Maybe it's the Memphis pick. Maybe it's a Clippers pick. You'd be parting with, obviously, guys on your roster, probably Jay Crowder, maybe Marcus Smart, maybe some combination of two of the three with those two and Avery Bradley. Someone else to make money work, like a Tyler Zeller. There are a lot of different things that you can do, but I think the biggest key, and Danny Ainge kind of in his own way acknowledged this talking earlier, is that it's a lot easier to get a handle on your books if you sort of let free agency, at least the start of it, happen first, and that's July 1st. If come July 1st, the Celtics, you know, the first call they're going to make is going to be Brad calling Gordon Hayward. They can get a quick meeting with him. He'll probably want to meet with other teams. He's obviously going to sit down with the Jazz, maybe the Heat in the mix, who knows. If you can get Gordon Hayward within the first couple of days of free agency, you know exactly what your financial situation is at that point with the max slot, and you can then assess whether or not you have the room to add a Paul George on an extended deal.
So if they bring in Gordon Hayward and they're trading for Paul George, they're not giving up Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, as you said. If that does happen, where would they fit in? How would you get them minutes when you have such a small forward heavy team?
Sure. I mean, again, it's, you know, I think the whole small forward thing is overblown. I think, you know, listen to Brad Stevens last night. He was asked I think the question was, and this was great, it was just typical Brad with the way that the NBA has gone. He was asked, do you view Jason Tatum as a three or a four? And his response was, doesn't matter. Who do you see him guarding? Whoever. And that wasn't Brad like being Bill Belichick, like being an ass. It was, you know, him stating, like, this is just the way the league is now. It's all about positionless basketball. You know, at points in the playoffs last year, we saw Jay Crowder playing the five. He's not a center. We all know that. So, you know, with small ball, you can do a bit of anything. I mean, Paul George has played the two. Jaylen Brown is capable of playing the two. They could also play the four, quite frankly. Gordon Hayward could play any of those three positions. You can, you know, and keep in mind with what we're talking about, it's possible that Avery Bradley's gone. Jake Crowder's definitely gone. So you could put a lineup on the floor that features Thomas and Horford and George and Hayward, and at points Crowder or Tatum, or if you're going a little bit bigger, Ante Zizic, if he winds up being here, as most assume he will be, and as, you know, I've been told he will be. So there are all kinds of permutations which make this whole thing fascinating, and clearly, just like the Warriors, that would be another four-man super-duper team. But whether or not this whole thing unfolds, you know, we'll see. It's right now, though, it's a lot of fun to talk about.
So back to the draft, too, because we're talking about Tatum. Might as well get some analysis on him. It seems like it's between him, Josh Jackson, and Jonathan Isaac for the guy the Celtics were going to take. Do you believe they got the right guy?
I do. Of those three, that's the one that I wanted. It's the one that I'd been tweeting quite a bit about, saying I felt the Celtics were going to go with. I just think they have enough guys that are defensive-minded and can't shoot or are struggling with their shot in that development. You know, it makes more sense to me if guys are on a more or less equal playing field, and I don't even know what they were, because, you know, Danny Ainge obviously, again, felt that Jason Tatum was his number one in the entire draft board, so maybe he was well ahead of Josh Jackson or Jonathan Isaac. He's ready-made as a scorer. He's a shot creator. He's a guy that has an inside-outside game. He can score on all three levels for you. He's good at the free throw line, which I think is not something to ignore. He shot 85% as a freshman at Duke, which is an indication to me that he's only going to get better in that department. He is, you know, can be at points, at least based on the scouting reports, a little lackadaisical on defense. But again, coming into this situation with Brad Stevens, where defense is stressed, he's going to be held accountable. If he wants minutes, even as a number three pick, if you're going to have him out there averaging, like Jaylen Brown last year, 18 minutes, let's say, something along those lines, then he's going to have to earn those minutes. It's going to work for him. They're not going to be gifted to him. So, you know, I think the team needed another guy that could go in, create his own shot, and provide some instant offense off the bench, some points, and hopefully, you know, down the line in a fantasy land, be a Paul Pierce or a guy like that. I know people want to make those comps, but for right now, I think slides in nicely to what the Celtics are doing and what they're building.
And we're talking to Adam Kaufman of WBZ AM 1030 and 98.5, the Sports Hub. Adam, what are your thoughts on the second-round selections? Obviously, a lot of people don't like to analyze this stuff too much, but they got some guys who were expected to be picked higher than they were. Semi Ojeleye, Kadeem Allen, and Jabari Bird. What are your thoughts on those picks?
So, yeah, I mean, I don't admittedly know a whole lot about the guys that went in the 50s. I still got to kind of read up on them. And I would say this about all three. I don't think any of them are going to be on the roster next year, you know, whether they get stashed overseas or whether they're in Maine. You know, the only way I see any of these guys, and I think Semi Ojeleye would be the most likely, the Duke transfer out of SMU, another forward. I think if he's on the roster, it's because the Celtics have added so many highly paid players, they got to fill out the roster with guys that aren't making a whole lot of money. But you also have, again, Zizic, Gershon Yabusele, in theory, Abdel Nader, who was the D-League Rookie of the Year last year. Any of these guys could be at the bottom of the roster as well. So, you know, we'll see how that plays out. But he's viewed Ojeleye as a huge steal. A lot of mocks had him going in the early 20s, even, you know, going in the first round. He ended up going 15 picks later than that at 37 to the Celtics. So I think he was a great pick, certainly worth the flyer. Another guy that can score. He put up, what, 20 points a game last year, albeit, you know, not as challenging a conference or opponent schedule. But generally speaking, another guy that, you know, is any of these guys in the second round, you could argue the entire draft, but most especially the second round, they're all lottery picks. You know, or, I mean, not lottery picks. They're all lottery tickets. They're all, you know, like Danny Ainge will have this stockpile of second round picks that he's collected over the years. They all just represent scratch tickets. Like, let's just see. Let's hope we hit on one. Like, look how many of those guys the Spurs have hit on, you know, over the years. And you hope that you're getting one of those guys. You're hoping you get a Malcolm Brogdon, you know, who might be the NBA Rookie of the Year. And he went in the second round last year to Milwaukee.
So the Celtics had the number one pick, traded down two spots, essentially passing up on Markelle Fultz and Lonzo Ball, two of the top guards in this draft. Does that give any indication of Isaiah Thomas's future with the Celtics?
I think it indicates it. I think it's fair to say that. I don't think it, you know, is any certainty of how things are going to unfold, clearly. But I think it is an indicator that Danny Ainge is serious. All the times that he has said that he wants to build around, or at least have Isaiah Thomas be a key part of the team's future, it's an indicator they intend to pay him a year from now when he's a free agent, as long as he doesn't, you know, totally, you know, crap the bed this year somehow, or have horrible residual effects from hip surgery, which he may not even have, by the way. He may not need surgery. But if, you know, if all of that unfolds, then sure. I mean, you can alter course, but I do think at least it's an indicator that Thomas is part of the plan, that, you know, they love him for, you know, on the court and off. And passing on Markelle Fultz to me was definitely a show of support for Isaiah Thomas. And not that Thomas would probably say so, but I don't think he was all that disappointed about it.
Again, we're talking with Adam Kaufman at WBZ Radio and 98.5 The Sports Hub in Boston. One last one, Adam, here before we let you go. Draft is in the books. Obviously, we'll have to wait for July 1st for anything to become official. But what's the Celtics' next move? Is it Hayward? Is it George? Is there something you think maybe is going underreported, a rumor that's not getting enough attention?
Hayward, I think, is the next step. At least he's the goal, whether you're able to achieve it or not. Clearly remains to be seen. He's got a good situation there in Utah, but I think he would have a better one in Boston. He wouldn't be leaving all that much money on the table in the spirit of opting out, let's say, after a third year and then looking for max money there. It'd only be about a $5 or so million amount that he'd be leaving on the table in Utah, which is a lot for me and you. But when you're talking about, I don't know, $70 million or something like that, it's not exactly going to ruin his life. So to go to his old coach and a passionate basketball city, he might be willing to do that. But you know, he's the next step, and you hope that you can convince him to come here and be part of what they're doing. As far as what happens after that, he's a huge domino. If you can get him, you jump right back into the Paul George trade discussions and hope you can convince him, kind of like going back in time in the Ray Allen Kevin Garnett situation. You know, they traded for Ray Allen, and then Kevin Garnett had to be convinced to be traded here. If they're able to do all of that, you know, successfully, then it, you know, that obviously would be two huge steps off of where they were at this time last year when they added Al Horford and couldn't quite get Kevin Durant. But they obviously have to address rebounding, underreported rumors. I don't think there's really anything underreported. I think there's just a whole lot of speculation right now. You know, will they trade Jay Crowder? Clearly they will if they're able to add Gordon Hayward. Will they deal Avery Bradley? Again, you know, a lot of this stuff depends on how other moves shake out. So it really kind of all begins with July 1st and seeing how that goes.
And you can follow that all along with Adam Kaufman on WBZ Radio, 10:30 a.m., as well as 98.5 The Sports Hub, Celtics at 7 Saturday mornings. Adam, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Pleasure's mine, guys.
And welcome back into Call It. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz. Whether you're catching us on SoundCloud, iTunes, if you're on one, subscribe to the other. We're also on Facebook Live today for the first time on the Snap Call Sports Facebook page. Hello, everybody watching on live. Check Hello. That out. If you follow us on Twitter at Call It Podcast, we'll tweet out when we're going live in the future. Did Periscope last week, Facebook Live, or on Monday, Facebook Live today. So far, a good experience, a good experiment. And we just talked with Adam Kaufman, 98.5 The Sports Hub, WBZ 1030 Radio in Boston about the draft. Let's get into it. Not much to get into. A pretty uneventful draft last night. The Jimmy Butler trade, probably the one big surprise. But, you know, overall, Alex, first time in a long time I've been happy with the Celtics draft.
Yeah, I mean, the pick of Jason Tatum made too much sense for them not to go with. He's a guy who's kind of the prototypical Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens product, coachable, high basketball IQ, you know, not great on defensive end, but they don't need that. They needed someone who could come off the bench, be an elite scorer. That's what he is.
And you know what? I would have been fine, I think, with Tatum or Isaac either mm-hmm. way.
Yeah.
This is probably a little less risk, but a guy who can play right now. I'm glad they didn't go Jackson. I think it would have been really easy for Danny Ainge. It's his kind of guy. Not really the basketball skills, but the athleticism's there. The only reason I wanted them to take him is if they were going to trade him for Porzingis. And to me, if they had taken him, it meant Porzingis was imminent. But look how much this changed. We went from, you know, Markel Fultz jerseys getting loaded into stores a week ago, and then they made the trade, and it's all about Jackson, and here we end up with Tatum. I don't remember the last time Danny Ainge kind of changed his mind like this. Last year, we didn't know. There was never a guy until it was Jaylen Brown. And in the past, we kind of knew. We knew Kelly Olynyk from the outset that was their guy. We had heard Terry Rozier for a while that was their guy. I think it shows a lot of growth in Danny Ainge. His drafting ability has been the one flaw in his skill set as a GM. And it shows that he really is able to adapt and figure things out and use all the time he's given leading up to a draft. And let me ask you this, because I wanted to talk about this last week, and on Monday, and we didn't get to it. The three skills for me, for a general manager in the NBA, really any sport, but in the NBA, the ability to identify and draft talent that way, the ability to identify and recruit free agents, and the ability to make trades. And I think we know where Danny Ainge stands on all three of those.
Yeah.
Rank those, if you have to build your ideal NBA GM, rank those from most important to least important.
So ability to build through the draft, bring in free agents and trading. I think bringing free agents in today's game is huge.
Yeah.
Second, 1A really would be drafting. Drafting is probably number one. I think drafting is the most important because you look at the best teams in the NBA in the past 15 years, you're talking the Spurs, the Golden State Warriors, the Cavaliers even, and you could talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder if you're talking about strictly talent.
They're all draft
picks. They're all draft. They all go through the draft. That's how they've gotten to where they are. And obviously you need to have the ability to bring free agents, but I don't think that comes down to an executive. I think that comes down to the team itself, the makeup of that team outside of that executive, the actual roster, and even more importantly, the coach.
So for you, it's draft, then trades, then free agency.
Yes.
So for me, that's the thing, and I know Ainge has a great scouting department. Danny Ainge, and I liked the pick last night, but Danny Ainge has I think part of the reason he went with the safer pick, he didn't go with Isaac and he didn't go with Jackson. I think was Tatum the safest pick of those three? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, he's the most polished guy.
Yeah. Is part of the reason Danny Ainge did that possibly He knows this. His entire reputation, his legacy as a general manager, is going to be tied in with this draft, with both Fultz and whoever he took last night.
I don't think he cares that much about it. I think Tatum from the get-go was the number one guy. If he cared about that, he wouldn't have ended up trading that number one pick. The safe thing for Danny Ainge to do wasn't to trade down. It was to pick Markelle Fultz, because that was the consensus. No one would have second-guessed it. Instead, he trades down and does something a little bit more risky. And the reality is, we won't know if it's the right move for another, 3 years. But he could have passed up on the next Russell Westbrook for all we know. He doesn't think so. He took a risk. And I think part of that's because of where he is in his career. He can afford to do that. He already has a great reputation, and he has confidence in his ability to evaluate this talent. I don't know if he really should, given his track record, but he does.
Well, the report is that he liked Tatum going back to Tatum's junior year of high school.
Yeah.
And that's only 3 years, thanks Sounds to like the a Danny one and done rule. Right. overall, though, I think Ojale, good pick.
Yes.
I don't know that much about the other two guys. Like Adam Kaufman said, I don't imagine we see them.
Kadeem Allen is supposed to be a really good perimeter defender. That's all I know about him.
So I guess if you trade Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, it's some insurance for that. But overall, I think the Celtics did well last night. Mm-hmm. I can't really pinpoint a team that did poorly last night. I'm not a huge fan of the trade the Bulls made. I definitely think Minnesota won it, for sure. I think LaVine's a pretty good player. I do like Chris Dunn. But Chicago got worse. I think they may go into tank mode now. Mm-hmm. As you see less and less teams start to tank, that phase in the NBA seems to be over. Not a huge fan of that trade, but I thought they picked well with the picks they got. Really just uneventful draft last night.
Yeah. I mean, in regard to the Bulls trade, I think they settled.
That is the word I was looking for. Perfect word. Thank you.
But they kind of had to, because the situation with that Chicago Bulls front office and Jimmy Butler was getting really, really strained and contentious.
When do you think they knew that he wasn't going to be on the team next year? Do you think they just decided that last night, because there were talks about him going to Cleveland?
Not.
Or how about that? Do you believe that Cleveland, that Kyrie, LeBron, whoever told Jimmy Butler to stay away from Cleveland? That, I loved that story. That was peak NBA 2017.
Yeah. I don't think it was Kyrie or LeBron. They want him there. I think if it was anyone, it was, a Kyle Korver or I don't know, maybe Kevin Love. Who knows?
When they said that players told him not to go, what I read that as was Jimmy Butler texted his friends on the Cavs.
Kyrie, maybe.
Kyrie.
Yeah.
They didn't necessarily say don't go. They said, here's the situation. Here's what it's like here right now. And that made Butler not want to go there.
Yeah, and I could definitely see that. But I don't know. Sorry about that.
You're good. Blowing up. You're popular. I understand.
It's definitely my dad calling me right now, even though he knows he's not supposed to. But I don't know. I think, honestly, what would they have gotten from the Cavaliers? Would it have been better than Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and the 7th overall pick?
I mean, it depends. Kevin Love seems to be one of the more polarizing players in the NBA right now. Some people still think he's an elite player. Some people don't think he's a legitimate starting five player anymore. I'm kind of in between those two. I think he's a good, not great player.
Mm-hmm.
I think he got lost a little bit in Cleveland. It depends how you think, what you think of Kevin Love at that point.
And it depends where they want to go. Is Kevin Love really the guy who's going to be there in 5 years when you want to compete for a title?
I think they got a good, not great. I don't think they got a – that's a good point. I don't think they got a great return for Butler, but I don't think the offer was out there that was worth what Butler was worth. And they just wanted to make this trade. They didn't want him here another year. Or they didn't want him in Chicago.
The only other team who could have pulled off a trade, I feel like – they were saying it's between the Cavs and Boston. It was between Boston and the Timberwolves, and the Celtics weren't willing to match the trade. And I don't know. It seems like this was bound to happen. I never expected the Timberwolves to get in on this, and it's clear.
And that team's going to be good now.
They'll be a playoff team next year. I really think that, and they're set up for the future. You got a 27-year-old guy in Jimmy Butler, who's one of the best defenders, one of the best perimeter defenders in the NBA. Karl Anthony Towns, who's turning into one of the best big men in the NBA, and Andrew Wiggins, who has a super high ceiling.
Right, for former first overall pick.
And Thibodeau, who I think is one of the best basketball minds as well.
Let's not, that probably weighed into a lot to the Jimmy Butler trade.
Absolutely.
Tom Thibodeau. So real quick here, because we are reviewing the draft, and it's tough to review this draft, not a lot to criticize, but outside of the top five, one pick last night you thought, you loved, maybe one pick you hated, one takeaway.
Outside of the top five.
Top five. I mean, we all know what the top five was.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. There's that guy from it's either Florida that I became captivated with. I think he's from Florida. And I have him written down. Just his size and his numbers and his ability. Bam Adebayo.
Yeah.
That guy, he was taken at 14th, I think, by the Trailblazers. And he was the perfect build, exactly what the Celtics needed, and he would have been available at number 10. So one of the things that I thought would have been a possibility is trading the number 3 pick down to get 5 and 10. Obviously, you'd have to give up like a Terry Rozier or something else because they declined the Lakers' offer of number 2 straight up. You could have gotten Jonathan Isaac at 5. He was available at 6. Yep. The Magic took him. And you could have gotten Bam Adebayo or Malik Monk at number 10. So I think that would have been something that would have been that was worthwhile. But I do like Malik Monk. I like Adebayo, and Jonathan Isaac to the Magic is also a really good move.
Monk was my guy. I think he's just a very exciting basketball player. Mm-hmm. He's still very raw, but him and Kemba in the same backcourt.
Oh,
that
yeah.
team low key added
Dwight Howard.
Right. Not yeah. a lot of people talked about that. Atlanta shipped him out for peanuts to get his contract mm-hmm. off their hands. But you talk about not that Dwight Howard makes a team up and coming. Obviously, they'll need a new big man to make a run at things, but. You know, teams in the East, that's a hell of a backcourt with Kemba and Malik Monk. Dwight Howard, that's a nice little team they got down there in Charlotte. Not that anybody's going to notice, but they could sneak in as a playoff team as well. All right. A lot happened last night at the draft besides the players being taken. Give us 30 seconds here to pay the bills. We'll talk about it on the other side. You're listening to Callin' It, brought to you by Snap Call Sports.
Callin' It is a Snap Call Sports production. SnapCall Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. SnapCall, the game within the game.
With the 51st pick in the 2017 NBA Draft, the Denver Nuggets select Monte Morris from Iowa State University. The New Orleans Pelicans select Edmund Sumner from Xavier University.
That was NBA Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum announcing the second-round picks last night. Alex Barth, Alex Lebowitz, Callin' It podcast. And if you didn't notice, if you listen carefully, maybe go back here, hit that 15-second back button, listen to it again. There's somebody in the crowd yelling the names of the picks before the commissioner says it. You even hear him laugh on the second one.
Yeah, I would have done the same thing.
No, I would just be like, you want to come up here and do it? Because it's known as... You ever seen the South Park episode on Faith Hilling with all the different memes? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
They call it pick tipping, and your kids might be doing it. It's tipping picks, for those of you who don't know, in the digital media age, a lot of these insiders, Adrian Wojnarowski was doing it last night. I know Jeff Howell, the Boston Herald, did it during the football draft. They get the pick sometimes 5-10 minutes before it's announced on
They're
TV.
Like three picks ahead of right. ESPN, yeah.
Because the TV draft has been done the same way for so long. It's done like a TV show. They have to get their graphics in, their mm-hmm. highlights in, commercials, etc., that they fall behind the actual draft. So you can go online and figure out the picks ahead of time. Now, it started to cause some issues. When people were first doing it, it was whatever. I think Jason Lockenfour of NFL Network was the first person to tip picks.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the – and I'm surprised it – it's taken this long for somebody to do this, but that's last night was the first time I can remember hearing somebody call out the picks before they were announced. Do they need it? They need to change the way they do the, and some of it is the TV coverage needing to speed up. Maybe the leagues need to slow down a little mm-hmm. bit too. I think most, where do you put the blame for tipping picks? Do you put it on the league? Do you put it on the TV broadcast, or do you put it on the people doing it?
I put it on the league. You need to. I think there needs to be some type of restriction so that they can actually, you know, run their broadcast, and that's important.
That's where the money's coming from.
Exactly. You can't be doing pick. It can't be every 30 seconds there's a pick announced. So you have to make money. They have to bring in revenue, and part of that is going to commercial breaks, bringing on guests, and trying to make your broadcast more interesting. And when you have Adrian Wojnarowski, tweeting out every pick ahead of time, it ruins it a little bit. The NFL doesn't do it. There's no rule against it. It's kind of like an unwritten rule, and Jeff Howe did do it. But
I think Lock and Forest still does it, too. I know
he might.
Schefter used to, and then he stopped.
But no one the caliber, like the Woj of the NFL, Schefter and Ian
Rappaport. Schefter's not doing it.
They don't do it. They could if they wanted to, but they don't do it. And a lot of that's because Schefter is an ESPN guy, although so is Woj now. So I don't know. I think they need to have some restrictions, because what is it really – what are you really accomplishing by doing that? You, like, Woj doesn't need that.
Do you look at tipping, or do you watch the draft for what it is?
I did both. I look at tipping and I watch it, because they do show highlights of these guys.
Right.
You get great analysis from a Jay Billis and even Jalen Rose.
And the complaint is, and this happened to me last night, you can't stay off Twitter because you want to see the Twitter analysis.
Absolutely.
So what my plan last night was to – I didn't want it tipped. I wanted to see the Celtics pick live. And then I didn't care. I whatever.
Yeah.
And I accidentally looked at Twitter.
Chad
at instinct.
Ford.
Chad. Was it Chad Ford? I think Chad Ford might have tipped it for me. Somebody tipped it for me. So I knew. And the person I was with saw my reaction. Then he knew.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not a fan of it. I'm not. Obviously, people are going to do it because I think as many people as don't like tip picking, enough people do like it that you're going to gain a lot of followers. And ultimately, you can make the argument journalistic integrity. You know the information. You don't want to withhold it. You want to put it out there.
Yeah. And that's why they can't really – that's why it would be tough for them to restrict it.
They can't – right. They can't say you're not allowed. And these guys are going to figure out. You can't necessarily stop them from getting the information. I think we're past that point.
Oh, no. Yeah. They had their sources, and they're going to stay in contact with them. And, you know, these sources, it's a mutually beneficial relationship between the reporters and the source. So you're not going to stop it.
If you're if you found this on Twitter, if you follow us on Twitter, at Calling It Podcast. If you don't, if you do, either way, go find us. Reply, shoot us a tweet. What do you think of tip picking? Let us know. Maybe we'll read out some of the good ones next week.
Pick tipping.
What'd I say?
Tip picking. Yeah.
Oh, speaking of Twitter, anyway, as we move on, one of my favorite parts of any draft, and this was great during the NFL draft. Now that we're a couple, 10, 15 years into Twitter, no, maybe not 15 years, 10 years
we're
into 10
years
Twitter,
in. 07 probably.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I think I got my first Twitter account in 8th grade. I don't want to.
2011, 2012
I don't want
for
people
me.
To know exactly how young we are because they'll turn this off.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're about 10 years in now, decade in. So, you know, a lot of these athletes, they didn't create their Twitter accounts as athletes. They created them as
kids.
Kids, right? Middle school, high school kids. And you have people go back and they go find the best of the best. I know John Collins, who was drafted by the Portland Trailblazers last night, was probably my favorite. Now we all know all he wants for his birthday is a big booty.
Yeah.
And he has some takes on how girls twerk. And that was actually a video. That was the first time I've seen it as a video.
And it's not controversial or you know, there's nothing. It's just
kids.
Embarrassing.
Right.
That's all it is.
Look, if somebody, and I don't want to put this invitation out there. Go back through my tweets. I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
I did find one last night praising the draft pick of Anthony Bennett. I was trying to find tweets from us to tweet before the draft, Cole taking it in the context. I knew it was about Anthony Bennett. His name wasn't in there. You have to knew it in context. You didn't have any cold takes either, by the way. So good for you. Congratulations.
I wasn't I wasn't that big of a Twitter up until a few years ago. Right. I've had it, but a tweeter rather.
Right.
But you know, I just got into it. I did have them.
We both sent out some tweets last night. I mean, I was using keywords like any tweet that had the word draft, the word pick, the word right, the word wrong. So I didn't find many from you. So well done. But yeah, I love that part of the. I mean, there are some NFL ones that I'm not necessarily going to say. Because I do know some people
Trubinsky.
Who let their kids listen to this. We'll leave it at Trubinsky. You can Google it. Who's the guy on the Packers? Geronimo Allen.
Yeah.
Really Google those. I'm not going to talk about those because we're going to get an ACLU complaint. Tyreek Hill. You know the ones I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Google that. There's a machine to find that. But really fun. And then one more social media point here before we wrap it up. The king of social media last night, without a question, was 1, 2, 3, LeVar Ball.
LeVar Ball,
yep. I want to make sure we're on the same page.
I didn't know you were doing that. LeVar Ball, I know exactly who we're talking about.
He was relatively behaved last night for what I thought he would be.
Said what you'd expect him to say.
Yeah, not too much out of the question. He did have one good answer. They asked him, you know, you've been talking about this day for 9 months now. What's it like to finally be here? And he said, 9 months, I've been talking about this for 20 years. And I actually thought that was a decent line. I didn't hate that one. Having the hat ready, yeah, we all knew. He had Lonzo change his shoes in the middle of, like, right after the pick was announced to purple and gold, ZO2s, whatever. But this guy, a lot of people said, look, he's going to get drafted and LeVar is going to go away. He's not going away.
No. And you heard it in the interview that he's in L.A. He's from L.A. And LeVar Ball will be at every single home game. I promise you that.
I'd go beyond home game. No, he is going to make the Lakers put him on the team plane.
Oh, maybe.
I would think he will be at all 82.
Why would you want that? That's.
Oh, I'm not saying the Lakers will, but I think that's what he's expecting. I think he believes he was just drafted by the Lakers. I think he expects to get the NBA treatment just as much as his son does.
I don't think we've ever seen a parent like this, and I hate people that defend him. It's not to get on a tangent here, but I hate LeVar Ball. I think he's horrible for sports. I think he's horrible for future parents. I think he is a bad parent in general, and this isn't about him. This isn't about his son. It's about him. It's his accomplishment because it's his seed, and it's not about his son's accomplishment. He's not letting his kid do him.
Right.
He is the one controlling his child, which makes me also think that Lonzo Ball will have an underwhelming career.
I think, look, one of his sons tweeted out a couple months ago, and I do see this argument. He's like, you're all hating on my dad, but he loves his kids. What's wrong with that? And I do think LeVar generally cares about his kids. And I will take that argument. That being said, you can love your kids to the moon. You can think your kids are the greatest thing and then still take advantage of them. And I think that's what this is. I think he does really care about his sons and wants them to do well, but he has taken advantage of them to an extent. Although I did see, which was very interesting, I think it was on Bleacher Report, they did an expose on him, you know, a week before the draft, I think. And apparently he told the middle one, LaMelo, that like, yeah, just be ready. You're not going to make it in the NBA.
Really?
Yeah. He's very honest with them. He has said that LiAngelo, the youngest, is the best, that has the most superstar potential. He doesn't. And a lot of people have said LaMelo's going to be a decent college player. Be late first, early second round pick. Might make it in the NBA, might not.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, at least he's realistic. That's what everybody was saying is, what if Lonzo wasn't so good? Will LeVar still be this guy?
I mean, his son's success gives him the credibility to smack talk like
what's going to happen when the next one isn't as good? And what's going to happen? You know, he needs the Lakers to be good now, because what happens if the Lakers, well, they can't pick inside the top five next year because the protections. But what happens if the Lakers aren't in a position to take one of his kids?
What if Lonzo Ball is a bust? Like, that alone will lose all of his credibility. It will ruin the big baller brand.
100%.
Because it's like, is Brian Scalabrine going to open a shoe line and it's going to take off? No.
I hope so. I would buy a pair.
Maybe. He's more marketable, though. He has personality. Lonzo Ball has no personality. His dad does. I
don't know. The Foot Locker commercial was good.
I hate it. I hate it. I can't.
What it stands for, yes, exploiting his dad for the commercial.
It's funny.
The commercial
it is
itself.
Funny.
And I thought Lonzo was good in it.
But it's a PR move. It's like the week before the draft, he comes out with the Player Tribune article, which, one, I read it, did not change my mind at all. It was, you know, when I had a bad game, even when I had a good game, you would tell me all the bad stuff I did. When the Lakers got the number two in the lottery, you were going around the house saying, I told everyone. That was in the Players Tribune article. He was quoting his father as saying, I told everyone. I did. This isn't about his son potentially going to his hometown team. This is about him, his last name being on the hometown team.
Right.
You know, it's so, he is the Joe Jackson of the NBA. Joe Jackson is the father of Michael and Tito and Jan. He is, he's a stage.
Marv Marinovich, if you haven't seen the Marinovich Project, fantastic 30 for 30.
He is Marv Marinovich with more charisma. That's all he
That's
is.
That's a great line. That's
all he is.
Intern Mitch, let's clip that.
Yeah, please.
All right, Mitch, if you're listening. You know what? A lot of interesting parent stories last night. The single parent story with Jason Tatum comes from a single family home. One of the first things he said, a lot of his contract is going towards helping single mothers, which I thought was fantastic. The story of Caleb Swanigan, who was a guy I wanted the Celtics to get, ended up going in the first round. I thought he might fall. His story is fascinating. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Which one's that?
Swanigan. It's the kid from Purdue. So I won't get into all of it. You can look it up. Yeah. But we're telling people to really. Google should sponsor us.
Yeah, honestly.
With the amount I'm telling people to Google stuff today.
Or use Bing. We can get them in there, too.
No. This is a quality program. We will support quality products. Like Snap Call Sports. Download us for iPhone or Android. So basically, grew up, mom worked a couple jobs, dad had a drug problem, weight problem, too. moved around. I think they said he had 13 homes before middle school. Was in a homeless shelter for a while.
Is he the one who lost 100 pounds?
Right.
Yeah.
Ballooned up to 350 pounds, gets adopted by a former Purdue football player, yep. moves with him to Texas, loses all the weight, becomes a good basketball player.
Yeah.
Great story. Look it up. A guy I really want to see succeed. First of all, he's a fun player to watch. He's more of an old school in the paint guy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I mean, that's a great story. A little Blindside-esque.
Yeah.
It's easy to make that comparison, but there is a little bit to that story there. But no, a lot. I thought a lot of good stories at the draft last night. I thought, what's his name, the point guard from Kentucky? Fox. I thought De'Aaron Fox was great. Yeah. With he had probably the best line of the night, and it almost made me want to see the Celtics take him. When they said, what's on your mind right now? You're minutes away from being drafted. What's on your mind? And he said, I want to know who I'm going up against first, who I'm playing first. And they said, anything else? He goes, nope, that's it.
Yeah.
And I thought, I mean, that was a killer instinct. That's the mentality I want.
He's someone who I think will have a good career. And he, his father said, speaking of dads speaking for their right. kids, he said something that was phrased in a very odd way, but essentially saying that he dominated Lonzo Ball.
His son ate up Lonzo twice. We'll say that. He ate him up twice. Yeah. He ate a specific part of him up twice.
Yeah, it was a little, you know, you got to watch the phrasing there.
We'll go back to our unofficial sponsor, Google.
Look it up. But, I mean, he's not wrong. I don't like him speaking for his son. I don't like parents coming out and saying that stuff. Let your kid do the talking. He's the one who's the athlete.
But you know what? He was talking at LeVar. And if a dad wants to talk at a dad, I think that's okay.
And if it's out of anger towards the way that a father is taking advantage of his son, that's more reasonable.
Right. He wasn't coming out and bragging about his kid. It was different than LeVar. He was like, hey.
He was responding.
If you want to talk about your son, fine. You talk about your son, leave mine out of it. And yeah. I think that was it's only when's Delonte West going to come and defend LeBron against LeVar Ball? You can Google that reference too, but I think a lot of you know what that one is. You know, all right. So overall, especially compared to the NFL, boring draft.
I enjoyed it. You know what? It's a lot of talent. Oh,
the one thing we forgot to mention. This was the most entertaining part: the fake Woj account.
That got everybody on
the Paul George rumor.
Oh, yeah. I almost retweeted. I was a second away, and I was like, wait, that's not his handle.
Well, hey, Sports Illustrated got it.
Yeah, I saw that.
So it was Woj's handle, except instead of NBA at the end, it was N8A.
Yeah.
And that account has since been banned from Twitter.
Good.
I don't know how that happens.
Well, why
by a fake account.
Why can they ban him? Like, I don't get that. That's for another discussion. But, yeah, that was another thing that was a funny part.
All right, well, that's enough NBA draft talk for us. 30 seconds on the other side. Mike Morial of NHL.com breaks down hockey's draft Friday night. He's Alex Lebowitz. I'm Alex Barth. Don't go anywhere.
Colin, it is a Snap Call Sports production. Snap Call Sports is available for iPhone or Android download. Snap Call, the game within the game.
Welcome back to Calling It. The NBA draft wrapped up yesterday. We've been talking about it all day. Let's move on to the NHL draft. It starts tonight. It'll go through the weekend. Joining us to help break it down from NHL.com, Mike Morial. He is in Chicago covering the draft. Mike, good morning to you.
How you doing, guys? Glad to be on the program. Thanks for having me.
Well, it looks like you're having a heck of a week, Mike. You've been in Chicago hanging out with the top prospects, throwing out the first pitch at Wrigley Field, big fan zone. What's the mood like around the draft, coming off the expansion draft, the great award show? Seems like the NHL is flying pretty high right now.
Yeah, it is. It is, Al. You know, the feeling here in Chicago is excitement. Obviously, there was plenty in Vegas with the expansion draft and all the moves that were made by Vegas GM George McPhee and the players that he received. And I actually spoke to a lot of the prospects yesterday during an availability about, you know, possibly playing in Vegas. And they were all excited about it. Obviously, they don't know where they're going. But I anticipate there being a lot more moves, you know, over the next 2 days, first round tonight and rounds 2 through 7. We'll be on Saturday at United Center. But, yeah, there's a lot of excitement here. Banners are up. People are walking through the streets. I see different jerseys. I saw some Penguins fans. Obviously, there's a lot of Blackhawks fans around town. But everyone's really gearing up for tonight, the first round. It should be exciting because I think everyone's trying to expect the unexpected. You just don't know what's going to happen.
You mentioned the Golden Knights, and with this expansion draft, there's been a ton of moves in the NHL. How has that affected this draft, and how will it affect draft night tonight?
Yeah, you know, George McPhee made it clear that he plans to be aggressive in the trade market, guys, and in the days that led up to that expansion draft, there were teams that really wanted to protect some people and protect their rosters, and they were willing to pay a pretty fair price to get Vegas to lay off certain people and get them to go in certain direction. Obviously, Vegas was willing to take on a couple of contracts that GMs would like to move. They have a lot of teams that are offering big contracts. McPhee's aware that, you know, what it's like to be on the other side of a tight salary cap, as when he served as general manager with the Washington Capitals. It's hard to move them. It's hard to move contracts. So teams look at Vegas as an opportunity to move a contract. But McPhee will only do what is right for his team if something's there for the right price. McPhee said that he's open to taking on pricey deals, but he'll be insistent on teams adding draft picks. Vegas now has 10 extra picks over the next 4 years after what transpired, in Vegas, including three in the first round this season. I don't think expansion affected too much how teams think about draft strategy, more than maybe those other GMs just making sure they have the proper prospects in the order in which they feel, you know, they will one day serve their team in the NHL. And by that, I mean their draft board this year. I don't think it's going to change much based on where Vegas fills in or where Vegas is picking or where other teams might be picking.
Again, we're talking with Mike Morreale of NHL.com. Vegas aside, the other big storyline for me this year is, for the first time in a while, we don't have a consensus number one. I know Nolan Patrick probably has the highest draft stock right now, but who do you expect to go number one tonight, and who is your number one?
Yeah, my number one mock drafts came out yesterday evening, guys, and Nolan Patrick is still my number one. Real intelligent player, big guy, skates well, smart with the puck. He just puts the puck in the right spots for his teammates. He's a guy that's shown he can score at the WHL level, and also look out for himself. When I went to scout him in the Western Hockey League in March, he dropped the mitts a couple times. And as everyone knows, he's had those injury issues. He missed 35 games with the sports hernia. But, you know, he came back strong, and it took him a while to get back into the swing of things. And he wasn't at 100% this year, guys. So I think people need to take that in consideration. When you're scouting a prospect, you're looking at the full picture. How many years did they play in the league? What did they do? What did they complete? What was their total breakdown? And Patrick's case, you're looking at a player that's played 3 years in the WHL, and he excelled in every season. This season, of course, he struggled a little bit, but still, despite the fact he did struggle, he still was 10th in the WHL in points per game, and he had a little over 46 points actually in the 33 games he did play. So I like his stride. I know he's got that long reach, which he uses very well. He's comfortable within his system, and I know John Hines with the Devils likes to run structured systems. I think Patrick is a fit there, and Patrick also will win those one-on-one battles. I think he's a top six center for the next 15 years. I love Hischier, guys. Nico Hischier will probably go number two. Hey, who knows? Maybe the Devils will draft Nico Hischier 1-2 because he was an exceptional talent this year, has real elite skill, skating, hockey sense, a great compete level, and that allows him to be effective in any style of game. He goes about 6'1", 178, little light. Patrick is a little bigger in that sense, and that's another reason why I like Patrick. A little stronger, a little more muscle in his game. But no doubt, he sure is an exceptional talent. He was named the Canadian Hockey League Rookie of the Year, 86 points in 57 games in his first season in North America. And he really opened some eyes, guys, at the World Junior Championship. Had 7 points there in 5 games. Bob Motzko, the coach of Team USA, who won a gold medal, said he was the best player that his team faced in that tournament.
Mike, you make a good case for both those guys, and it's nice to see that there's multiple guys who could go number one. The past couple of years, we've had guys like Austin Matthews, Connor McDavid, these guys that you knew from the drop, they were going to go number one, they were going to instantly make waves in the league. Is there that kind of that next level elite prospect in this draft, whether it is one of those guys you talked about, whether it's somebody else, or is this year's draft class maybe not as top heavy as recent years?
Look, you know, the short answer is that there's not a generational player, if that's what you're asking. You know, I think we've been spoiled, guys. Think about it. The hockey fans have been spoiled the past 2 years in these drafts. I mean, we've got McDavid, winner of the Hart Trophy this year. We got Jack Eichel, who was drafted right after McDavid a couple years ago. We had Austin Matthews, winner of the Calder Trophy this year. Patrick Laine was right up there with the Winnipeg Jets. He was drafted number 2 in 2016, right after Austin Matthews. So we've been spoiled with some exceptional talented players that have been coming into the league and have been having impacts, and it's very rare to get those type of players. Look, the 2017 draft is not top-heavy with impact franchise-type players, but the top 10 to 15 players have a chance to be household names, you know, with NHL fans down the road. There's a lot of high-quality NHL prospects in this class at the top end, and I anticipate that you'll see a lot of top six forwards, top four defenseman-type guys, and potential number one goaltenders come out of the draft.
Is there one player that you feel like isn't getting enough credit that might surprise people once he does make it to the NHL in this draft?
You know, being a small guy myself, guys, I look at the smaller players because I know sometimes they don't get that enough attention as maybe the bigger, stronger guys do. But there were three players that really come to my mind when I think about, you know, guys that could have an impact but are like that Johnny Gaudreau, Tyler Johnson type. They have those type frames. The one guy, Kale Yamamoto of Spokane, he's a right wing, plays in the Western Hockey League. He was ranked 6th in the WHL with 99 points this year, scored 42 goals in 65 games. He goes 5'7", about 153 pounds, and he reminds me so much of Johnny Gaudreau, his ability with the puck and just his demeanor on the ice. He thinks the game extremely well. He's consistently moving with the puck, without the puck, to get himself in position to receive it. And there's an elusiveness about his game that puts opponents under pressure whenever he has that puck. And an interesting fact about Yamamoto is the fact that the mother of Tyler Johnson, the forward for the Tampa Bay Lightning, taught Yamamoto how to skate in Spokane. They're from the same area. So he's an exceptional skater. I like what I see in Yamamoto despite his size. Nick Suzuki, a center, also played right wing for Owen Sound in the Ontario Hockey League. He goes about 5'10". 170-75. I mean, not very small, but a very dynamic player. He had 96 points, 45 goals in 65 games, very versatile, possesses high-end sense, good vision. He's a gifted passer, and he's very poised in possession with the puck. He can execute skilled plays in traffic areas, and that's what I like about him. And one other thing that I really attract, why Suzuki really attracts a lot of the scouts, guys, is the fact he comes through in the clutch. 14 power play goals, six game winners, five shorties, five insurance goals. He scored the first goal of the game 8 times, and 23 of his 45 goals this year either tied the game or gave his team the lead. So I really like what I see in Nick Suzuki. And one other guy I'll give you, Erik Brännström, a defenseman. He's an international guy from HV71 in Sweden. Small lefty, 5'10", about 173 pounds, steady producer. He compensates for that size with a great mobility and speed. He can run a power play. A good NHL comparison might be Bruins defenseman Tori Krug. I like Brännström. He was one of the best Swedish defenders in terms of offense while playing in the Swedish Junior League for his team there. He produced over a point a game, and that strong play earned him a call-up to the senior squad where he more than held his own against a higher level of competition. So those are three guys that I think maybe might be a little bit under the radar. They could go late first. Maybe someone sneaks into the second. But any team, you know, fortunate enough to get one of those players, I think is going to be set at those positions maybe 3 years down the road.
So those are the guys who are under the radar. Anyone in this draft do you think might be picked too early that's kind of getting too overhyped?
Oh, man, that's a tough one. Like I said, this draft class is so unpredictable of where players might be chosen. Everyone is going to have a different draft board here. So we just don't know where players are going to fall. I really don't think you can make a bad choice. Obviously, I think that Nolan Patrick and Nico Hischier are numbers 1 and 2 in this draft class, and I think then everyone else kind of falls into place. And all 31 teams, guys, are going to have different lists. So I don't think there's one particular player that might be overhyped right now. I know there is some, you know, there's talk out there. Everyone has their particular lists, and there are certain scouts that feel this player should be taken over that player. I thought NHL Central Scouting did a nice job in making a statement with Casey Mittelstadt. Here's a high school player. He played for Eden Prairie High School in Minnesota, also played for Green Bay in the United States Hockey League. And despite the fact he played high school hockey, NHL Central Scouting had him ranked number 3 among North American skaters on their final list. So it's very rare to see a high school player ranked that high. In fact, the last high school player ranked this high was Brian Lawton when he was drafted way back when. And Brian Lawton was actually picked number 1 by the Minnesota North Stars that year. So, you know, Casey Mittelstadt being ranked number 3, what he did at every level, he excelled on the high school level, was named Mr. Hockey as the best senior high school player in the state of Minnesota. And in the USHL, against bigger, stronger competition, he led the USHL in points per game. He played in the USHL prior to his high school season and again a few more games after the high school season. But I like what Mittelstadt has shown this year. So to answer your question, I don't think there's any bad choice here. Obviously, teams are going to have their lists. And, you know, let's face it, these are 17, 18-year-old kids. They need to be developed properly. You can't expect them to be playing in the NHL, you know, next season. I think Nolan Patrick and Nico Hischier are probably the only two players that have that ability to possibly play in the NHL next year. The remainder of this draft class, guys, I think these players need to develop, they need to grow, they need to learn the game, they need to get muscle, they need to get stronger. And maybe they'll play in the NHL maybe, you know, 2-3 years down the road.
Again, we're talking with Mike Morial of NHL.com. You mentioned high school hockey, Mike. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention a little college hockey. Being a guy who's covered Hockey East myself, doesn't seem like a big year for the NCAA in this year's draft. I've seen mocks with maybe only one NCAA guy going in the first round. Do you get that impression? And who are some NCAA guys you're looking at this year?
Yeah, good point. You don't see guys that are in college right now that are ranked on Central's list. St. Cloud State freshman center Ryan Poehling, 6'2", 183, might be the first college guy off the board. Scored just 13 points, 7 goals in 35 games for St. Cloud State this year. But what has scouts excited is his pro-style game below the circles. He's good on the power play, exhibits excellent hockey sense. Another guy I feel could possibly go in the first round, I have him going in the first round of my mock draft, was goaltender Jake Ottinger of Boston University, a left-handed catching goalie. Finished his freshman season, a true freshman, guys, 20 wins in 33 regular season games. That's extremely good for a freshman goalie. 211 goals against, 927 save percentage, a lot of poise. I love Ottinger's demeanor in net. I mean, and he covers such a lot of the net because he's such a big goaltender. I think one other thing to consider is the fact that a lot of the players that aren't in college right now will be freshmen at certain institutions next year, and there's a lot of them in this draft class that could go rather high. Defenseman Luke Martin is committed to the University of Michigan next year. Could be a late second or third round steal. Martin plays for the National Team Development Program in Plymouth, Michigan. There are many good players who will go in this draft who will attend college. As I said, Casey Mittelstadt is going to the University of Minnesota. Defenseman Cale McCarr, he could go top 5 in this draft class. He's going to the University of Massachusetts Amherst. Shane Bowers of Waterloo in the United States Hockey League, he'll go to Boston University. Bowers is a Canadian kid, played in the USHL this year, really good at moving the puck, protecting it, good hands, solid skater. Goaltender Keith Petruzzelli of Muskegon in the United States Hockey League, he's going to Quinnipiac University next year. Potential second-rounder, guys. Similar to Matthew Murray, the Stanley Cup winning two-time Stanley Cup winning goaltender with the Pittsburgh Penguins. Scouts say that he has a lot of similar qualities as Matt Murray. Grant Mismatch of USA's National Team Development Program, he's committed to the University of North Dakota next year, a Boone Jenner-type player. Goaltender Caden Primo, you might notice the name. Caden Primo is the son of Keith Primo, longtime NHL player. He's going to Northeastern University next year. Very patient goalie, plays a hybrid style, very smart and tight. And finally, Joshua Norris of the NTDP is committed to the University of Michigan. Good two-way player. Took his offense to another level this year, guys. Good playmaker, skates really well. And one other thing about Norris, he's number 34 in Central's final ranking of North American skaters, so they have him tabbed possibly late second, third-round choice. He finished first in five of the tests at the NHL Scouting Combine, including that peak power output on the Wingate test, that grueling bike test that the players have to go through. So Joshua Norris is another player to consider.
Mike Morial, thank you so much for coming on. You can read him at NHL.com. Follow him on Twitter at Mike Morial NHL. Enjoy the draft tonight.
Thanks a lot, guys. Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for us for this week on Calling It. Short week. We'll be back Monday.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, you can catch me on Snap Call Sports Saturday night doing some baseball. You got anything you want to plug?
John Lebo's show. We had a draft special. It's kind of outdated. But that comes out every Thursday. So John Lebo's show on Twitter and my Twitter at Alex_Lebowitz.
At The Real Alex B. Make sure to follow up also at Calling It Podcast for the show. I want to thank Adam Kaufman of 985 The Sports Hub, Mike Morial for talking hockey with us. That'll do it. Subscribe, SoundCloud, iTunes, all of it. We'll talk to you Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
You've been listening to Calling It. This episode has been brought to you by Snap Call Sports. Snap Call. The game within the game. Available for iPhone or Android.